Welcome to Starfleet vs. On-Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I've been SW Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just might not have joined us to talk guest every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444, just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702 or Starfleet Universe On-Call. Both will be able to help you find our wonderful TalkCast. But if you want the best online experience, I say go to twitch.tv. That's twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. And you will find us there. You will watch the wonderful Twitch stream while I'm recording. And, of course, you can join the chat room. And hopefully I'll be able to respond to your messages. You know, I'm more than happy to do so. And of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on the Twitters, you can follow me on the podcast account, sfuoncall, or my personal account, Paul Franz, PaulFranz. Of course, also, there's Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, there's no T in that. But also, if you're on Blue Sky, you can follow me there too. My podcasting account is sfuoncall@bsky.social. And of course, if you want to follow my personal account slash my also my business account, same thing at the moment, but just go to friendsgames.com, follow that one, and you will find us there. Just a reminder, I am on hiatus from social media during Lent, so as soon as that up, I will be back on it. Maybe not as much, but I will be back on it. But anyway, and moving onward, of course, the TalkCast gets through the podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Hopefully you can read it. And of course, the news from ADV this morning is short and sweet. Same old, same old. Gina also was able to continue proofreading the Orion Master Starship book, and Nicole still was able to work some more on Module K, and actually, I think Steve Petrick also was working on Module K too. Cool. Module K also. Not the number two, also. Okay. And of course, this week on Found on the online store, we found the FedCom Asteroid Map Panels. Now, these are $8. They're two map asteroid map panels. Now, these are not the ones from Romulan Attack, these are the ones from the Battleships Attack. So it says $8 for these two panels. And these, if you like to play asteroid battles, you know, where the idea is that you're trying, basically the asteroids give you a trail which you need to follow, otherwise you'll get damaged, which I think is really cool thing. It's almost like a racer kind of thing. Star Wars pod races, that kind of thing. That's what it reminds me of. So I definitely would maybe get a couple packs of those, put them together and create kind of a racetrack kind of thing, which I think is actually kind of cool. Okay, moving onward and forward, Frank is still running his SMP campaign, which is Above and Beyond campaign. Obviously, if you need to contact them, feel free to check there should be on the discussion board. Also, if you need contact information from them, please feel free to contact me at sfuoncall@gmail.com, because I did not write down his email address here, so I apologize. Otherwise, I would have usually given that to you. And then, of course, we have the 500 BPV tournament, which is still going on. We got round two set up. Dustin and I will be playing it, hopefully this weekend. There was a delay in getting it started, and then Justin needed to supply his commander's options, and he needed to tweak them because Jeff said, no, not quite right. So, and now Jeff's okayed his commander's options, and as I told both Justin and Jeff, they're the same as last time. Now, I don't think I've actually announced what they are. Well, I'm pretty sure I didn't. But even so, I don't think there's any reason for me to change it from what I had previously because I don't think there's much I can do. It's not like I have seeking weapons where I can tweak my drum loadouts, you know, things like that. But anyway, moving onward and forward, when it comes to the library report, there's nothing happening there. Actually, there is at least one ship, if not two, that I need to actually update the library on. One of them was for the Lyran. Also, FedCom, I still have to post the FRDs, and I apologize for not getting them up sooner. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, I say one of the old Paul Fums, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Gary. Say hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary.
And we have Doug. Say hello, Doug.
Hello, Doug.
So, this evening, we're actually going to talk about two different topics, at least I hope we get to both. I don't see a reason why we can't, because I know Gary wanted to continue the discussion about the 500 BVV tournament, and especially some of the discussions that are going on the discussion board itself. Now, I'm painfully aware. I'm not quite painfully aware. I'm not that aware. I have read some of, obviously, who was it? John Stiff. Hey, John. John Stiff also plays a lot of Starfleet Warlords, so I know him. And actually, I've played him face-to-face. His Hydran versus my Andromedan, and when the Origins Convention was in actually Philadelphia, in their convention center. Still remember that. The reason I remember that is because I just graduated from Drex University at the time. So I would drive in to Philadelphia. So I lived relatively close to Philadelphia at the time. I'm a little farther away now, like an hour and a half drive versus like a 20-minute drive. But anyhow, one thing he said, and I totally agree with him, which is about drone races with fighters. Because someone said, who was it? Who the frick said that? Who was the... In my mind, almost on the moron said this. Let me just see if I can find it real quick. See if
not a moron for saying it, maybe for believing it, whatever it might be, but not necessarily for saying it. What was it?
Who was it? I might not be able to find it. Okay, I think I'll. Not try to find it. But basically, John Stiff was replying on this one thing which said, they said, personally, I'd like to see a setting with where carriers are permitted. Fighters are already part of the tournament, but anyway, which is a totally different thing. Like fighters are already in the tournament. Via what? The Hydrans. And the direct fire fusion, fighters that they have. Yeah, and Don Stiff's comment, which rightly so, says, my comment on that is that drone races with fighters would really unbalance the game. Yeah, no kidding. Imagine multiple fighter drone launches in addition to the already powerful ship-launched drones. And if mega fighters are allowed, then run for the hills. And I totally agree with that comment.
But wouldn't it all balance out on BPV stuff?
Oh... Now, you know how I feel about BPV. as if you didn't know. Because, as I said, actually, I did respond just earlier tonight about Justin saying, very BPV is very manageable, and going in, everyone knew that it's not a duel, and that level of management does not suit the sticks, small scenarios, which we might be doing. But he basically, I think he said basically that, not this last post, but some other post, or some other people said, basically, actually, I think mainly it was Justin, who said that, plasma, a 500 BBB plasma-based ships versus one that's heavily drone-based ships, You know, that can be unbalancing. And actually, one thing that Peter said earlier in this discussion about the a really good comment, I think, a really good thing that was completely valid, which was that he said that basically that tournament, you know, when it comes to fleet battles, when you have normal, regular fleet, you know, the ones that are in the middle, that they have some of this, have some of that, you know, they're not on the extremes, that they actually play rather well versus the extremes. Now we already have had two extreme fleets in this game. One, we have the guy I played against, Rick, with his 5 destroyers, which ends up being 20 photon torpedoes. No drones, just 20 photon torpedoes. You know, can it move that much? Yeah, it can move. Can it move that fast? No, I can't move that fast. When it comes to, not really. Does it have all the power for EW? No, it doesn't. So that's one end of the scenario. The other end is what Peter ran into. Peter ran into basically a fleet which had all of, 8 disruptors between 4 ships. The rest was just drones. So he got caught on the other end of the spectrum, where basically it was an extreme drone fleet. You know, they went through, he used to mention how many drones they went through in a few turns. You know, they went through a lot of drones in just a few turns because of, we got the D60, the D60, which has basically 6 drone racks. You got the C7, which doesn't, I think it has, I forget how many drone racks it has, but I think it's like, might have 6 drone racks also. But also, both of those have double control capabilities. And then they had 2 E4s. And the 2 E4s don't have much drone capability, but what are they there for? They're there for one reason only. They're there to control other more drones. So you got these 2 ships. I mean, these 4 ships, out of these 4 ships, you've got, let me think, 6 and 6 is 12. Mm-hmm. So you got 36, you can have 36 drones on the board. And that's assuming that none of them are self-controlled. They don't, I think it's ATG, if I recall correctly. They're not, none of them are ATG drones, and I don't know about that. And of course, then you have the reloads, which, as I talked about last week, I don't think reloads really are that big of an issue because of, in that case, the key there is going to be keeping the pressure up. Have it so that he can't, either he can not load his drones, you know, either he can launch his drones or he can, and if he keeps doing that, at some point he's going to run out of drones. So they're not available. Now, of course, the problem is trying to kill 36 drones each turn. They can't launch that many. Actually, in theory, they can with some scatter packs. They could probably launch that many. But they can't keep that up for very long. But still, that's a lot of drones they have on the board at any time. So, and then someone says, oh, you should allow fighters. Like, no. We allowed the limited amount of fighters, which was the Hydrans. And for particular reasons, only because of we wanted the possible flavor of the Hydrans so they could actually fly their normal ships, have the fighters, because the fighters are part of the way the Hydrans were created. That's part of their whole strategy. Their whole fleet design.
Background.
Yeah. Fleet design.
Their race thing.
Yeah.
Their faction.
Yeah. Their empire. The way the empire ships were designed was that you basically you had one capital ship, and you always had these fighters which, you know, had more fusions in them, and they would land on the, get nice and close to deceive and then possibly destroy it. I'm not sure how many.
It depends.
Yeah, well,
they had basically three kinds of ships. They've got ships that will destroy you all by themselves. They've got ships that have fighters as a major part of their firepower that will destroy you all by themselves. And then they have the hybrid-y things.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the captain's log where the advertisement for the D7. It's like,
uh-huh. I had that on my wall for a long time.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
This is your ship after two stingers.
So when the Empire tells you to engage, say no.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But anyway, you know, one thing that Justin brings, you know, basically, I feel like Justin is missing part of the point here. Because he's saying, you know, S8.0 is more than good enough as is. Basically, he doesn't think he should be able to use just those rules and we should be fine. I disagree there. I'm just not seeing the issue with running a 500 BPV 4 turns or 14 turns, regardless of the forces, is very manageable. This is not a fast game, never has been. That being said, the games are and have been very manageable and fun, in my opinion, well, maybe for him. And because the big question is, as who was it? Peter said basically that in his game, he spent over 25 hours over 11 gaming sessions to complete his game. That's a lot of game time.
Yeah.
Just to get through one game, in which case, in the single elimination, he lost. So after 25 hours, he lost the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Peter was mentioned my game. He said, you know, the self-fed game also went for unknown, also by me, number of turns for unknown number of hours, which I know I didn't post much about the battle on the discussion board because, honestly, I suck at that. I really do. Mm-hmm. And it takes me so much long. You want to, it would take me that much, you know, like easily 2 hours to write down a summary about it. Go back into the game and find it out. Now, it's possible that Peter's writing this up while he's going along, and I'm not. And that's why he can easily do it.
And or it's just something he can do easily.
Yeah, he said, I think the game ended a concession, and he did. And it did. And I just mentioned that, that the Celt versus the Fed game was actually, you know, we got it done in around 10 hours overall. And that was 9 turns in 10 hours. For the most part, you know, the first 8 turns took us around 6 or 7 hours. It wasn't until the 9th turn where everything just slowed. You know, actually, you know, that was turn number 8. So we completed 9 turns. On the completion of the 8th turn, you know, that took us 3 hours to get through that. And that's because we were very close to one another. And that's when things got really slow when it comes to moving and fighting and so forth. You know, up until that point, we were running it, you know, we kept our range greater than range 9 or greater for most of the game. You know, so it was very slow going when it comes to amount of damage. We could go through the turns very relatively quickly. It's just that, you know, it was, you know, slow going in knocking down the shields and so forth. So, not happening. Ted, in my honest opinion, interesting partial exercise may not be a good idea. Actually, it's next to impossible when it comes to client, and it's. Actually, I still remember going when it comes to partial X refits. It's a very, very tough thing to do in the client because of so much stuff can be tweaked. This can you can upgrade this, upgrade up. And Aaron and I tried to work through this issue so many years ago now. I realized the amount of work it's going to take for a very small number of battles, so small that it's not worth the time or effort to actually support partial X refits, you know. Obviously the one thing that did get mentioned, and I think this is I mentioned it last week, but I'll mention it again anyway this week, which is the idea. Actually, someone even posted it. Let's see if we can find it. Oh, I did. For those of you out there that don't read the discussion board, there is one thing that I did post on the discussion board, which is actually very, very interesting, I think, overall. And that is that I found the hotkeys. And as I posted on the discussion board, because, you know, we were all flying fleet battles. So it's like, okay, some people might be pretty interested in this, because the one great thing about it is on the game board, it will hide the counters of certain types. In this case, hit shift control 1, it hides all point of turn and all point of slip counters. If you hit shift control 2, it will hide all the seeking weapons. Shift control 3, all shuttles and fighters. Shift control 4, all ships. Shift control 5, you can hide all web counters. Shift control 6, all hide all mines. And shift control 0 can hide all miscellaneous pieces, including terrain counters. Dun, dun, dun. So did you just show up?
What?
Did you drop and come back?
No, I've been here the whole time.
Okay.
You have not dropped for me.
Okay. I thought I heard someone come on. Anyway. But as I mentioned at the beginning of my little posting of this features, this is the feature is the ability to hide and, of course, unhide different kinds of units. Now, the problem with this feature is that it's very cool. And it's really nice when you have the feature available, because then you can get rid of a lot of the clutter on the board. Problem: you must remember that you activated the hiding of those. Because you don't, you can have, if you say, oh, I want to hide all seeking weapons, I just want to see the ships. Fine, you can do that. Problem: if you don't remember to unhide all the seeking weapons, You can in theory have the seeking weapons go bam, hit you, and they go, what was that? You know.
Surprise.
Oh, surprise. Uh oh, hold on. Gary, did you drop off?
Yeah, the call just dropped. I had to call back in. I'm not sure what happened there.
Okay. So the other one that dropped. Okay. that explains that. But anyway, yeah. So you know, it can be as I mentioned. I added a cool but dangerous feature. It's cool because you clean up the board. It's dangerous because if you forget, you could die, and that is true. So as I said, it's very cool. It can be extremely nice because the first time I added this because I had this large fleet battle and it was with my Andromedan fleet, which Frank asked me to play, and it's like, I'll do it. Sure. That was kind of cool. The one thing about that, though, was that I have my fleet coming in, and then we have this Fed fleet that had some hydrants with it. Fortunately, no Hellbores, but fighting against me. Now, they started launching fighters and things like that. So, what's the one thing I wanted to do? hide all those fighters so I can actually see where the ships are. You know, I do that. You know, I toggle that off, and then I look around and so forth. Then I bring it back, because as I said, it's a cool but a very dangerous feature. So, and for those of you out there who actually are play on the online client, though that's available, you just have to make sure you have the board as your active window, and then you can do that. And as I said, it's quite cool, quite dangerous. Use with caution. Yeah, there was a discussion in the, which I think is an excellent idea. Did I have it here? Yeah, the C7 was incredible. And obviously, Gary, your question was answered. Basically, it is illegal to have a C7 and a D7D. So
I don't think it should be though, because
right.
I feel that either what you could do is basically make only the flagship be move cost one, unless you're a Borat, in which case it has to be move cost 3/4 or bigger, and the rest of your fleet has to be smaller than that, like move cost wise. So for the Klingons, for example, you could have a C7 or a D60 or some other thing as your flagship, but then you'd have to have a D5 or something like that as your second size class 3 ship. Or I'm not too sure, because I think in some fleets, the circumstances, a heavy war destroyer counts as a de facto size class 3 unit, so that might apply here too. But I feel that doing this would basically go some way. So for example, like if the Klingons picked a C7, they could pick either a D5D as its second size class 3 ship and then pick a scout, size class 4 scout, or they could pick a D5S and then pick a size class 4 drone variant. Each of those separately is more of a challenge to keep alive than a single D60. And so I feel that that would be only fairer in terms of not using like certain specialty units that are intended in universe to be like long distance bombardment variants. Although some D60s do get used in direct combat. So I don't know. It didn't seem to like get too much traction though. So I guess we'll have to see what happens there. But one of the other things as well is, in theory, you could set up the tournament with a sliding scale, depending on what time period you want to have the tournament
right.
set in.
Right, that was actually...
So, for example...
Continue, I'm sorry.
No, same.
Yeah, the only thing I was gonna mention about the force makeup, there's a couple of things that definitely I agree with. And that is... One of the biggest issue here in my mind is you can either take away the D7, the D6D, or take away the C7, one of those two. But because actually more importantly, I think it's just the D6D. And here's why I say that. When it comes to a ship, the D60 is one of those few full-sized scouts, meaning size class 3 scouts, that doesn't really give up much when it comes to firepower. It now has a great capability to launch drones, and also has all the additional drones that it can keep launching. And has, of course, it's a size class 3, it has lots of power. And because it has lots of power, it can use those special sensors and use the EW from those special sensors. Because that's when I will be getting to when we talk about the lineup for Justin versus me in just a few minutes. Well, in a little while. And Because one thing, just to mention, just quick highlight, on Justin's fleet, he doesn't have a full-sized scout. He's got a scout frigate. Now, the problem with this scout frigate is, of course, power. Unlike a D6D, it doesn't have like 38 points of power. It's got like half of that. So it can't move. It can barely move and chew gum at the same time when it was trying to use its special sensors for EW work, that is. Can you, you know, there's a lot of wonderful special things you can use with the special channels other than EW. And that's one, I think that's more of what that kind of the FF, Scout Frigate is about. But anyway, I digress. Well, it's something we will be talking about. And one of the people, I can't find the post at the moment. Actually, I gotta check that. I love the Andromedas. Sorry. Actually, there are some bugs in the climb when it comes to Andromeda. I still gotta figure out how to duplicate it. Usually, it's about the power issues and how that works and so forth when it comes to panels and so forth. But anyway, I digress. But one of the people that suggested was basically the year, the starting year. And I think that's a good idea. For nothing else, that all the drones are not fast drones. You're limited to the amount of drones that are fast. If you have like Y-175 or Y-178, or if they want to, they can say, well, okay, we're going to give you one Y-180, but the drones restrictions when it comes to medium, fat, and fast drones, and slow drones, but fast drones particularly, is here are the limits on your fast drones. So that you don't have the big issue of the Speed 32 drones, because what's wrong with the Speed 32 drones? The problem with the fast drones, i.e. Speed 32, is that Speed 32 drones, you can't get around. You have to kill them or run away from them. That's your only two choices here.
Not always.
What else is there?
You can't run forever necessarily, but you can run from them for a time.
Right.
And you can low power take some of them out.
Right. But that
it forces you to change your tactics, basically. So, I mean, it just makes them much more dangerous.
Right. Because,
more of an immediate threat.
Right. Because the biggest issue with the fast drones is that one, they're fast drones. Yes. Yes. And the biggest issue there is there's no way, unlike Speed 20 drones, Speed 20 drones, you can actually get around.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be going pretty fast to get around them and keep up that speed to run away from them. But still, you can get around them without requiring you to destroy them or definitely have to run away.
You can do a similar thing with the Speed 32 drones. They're basically like plasma in that sense. You can run away from them. The problem is that you have to keep running.
Right. Because see,
and it really limits your ability to use your firepower and keep recharging. So yeah, it has some very distinct issues, shall we say. And it definitely makes it dangerous. But the thing is, at that point in time, when everybody's got Speed 32 drones, you also have all the refits on all those ships, and everything's upgraded, or they're new ships that are much more capable of dealing with those drones. So it's almost a 6.5, one dozen of the other. It's just that it's a paradigm shift
in the western,
for,
in the western part of the Alpha
for how to use them.
Right. Some empires like the whole like keeping up thing is one thing if you're like a Lyran or a Hydran, or if you're like another empire that like the ISC that gets it serious, like side-firing refits and so on. But part of the issue was whether or not the Gorns could keep up, because most of their fleet's not really designed to deal with like fast drones in the same way. That was why some of the discussion was talking about
should
they
be
allowed, or other empires be allowed to have partial X refits and so on.
Right,
but that's more of a game issue.
Yeah, well, if you really think about it, some of these empires were never meant to match up. Never meant to fight against one another. You know, because obviously that's one of the minor one of the issues that plasma chuckers have an issue with fast drones. The fast drones can move as fast as a plasma, but here's the thing: plasma can't run out. It runs out after a certain number of impulses. Versus that same drone, yeah, it still runs out after a certain number of impulses, but it lasts for like I'm thinking 20 versus like three times as long. It lasts for actually it's more than that. Because it can last for 96 impulses, the standard ones. The standard duration is 96 impulses versus a drone, a sneaking weapon. A plasma can only last for like 20 impulses. You know, and what's going at that point, it's dead. Drone, fast drone, 96 impulses, and then it's dead. So, you know, the Eastern race, you know, empires, you know, the Romulans, the Gorns, and the ISC, to a certain degree, were designed to fight one another. You know, and obviously the Romulans had interactions with the Feds, so they did have some interactions with drones. But what saves them? Da-da-da-da. They have cloaking devices. Now, actually, that was one thing I looked up, actually, at the Fed Commander tournament. And that's one thing they do limit as part of the tournament, is they say, well, you have a maximum of, I think it's 48 impulses that your ships can be, that a ship can be cloaked for the entire game. The idea, but of course, this is also Federation Commander, which is totally different kettle of fish. Because of course, da-da-da-da-da, it has no wild weasels. They have no T-bombs.
Yeah.
So, completely changed. Lord knows. Anyway, in a way, to be truly honest, I hope they never, ever, ever, ever actually ship the module or whatever. That's not really a module. That's what it's called. But that they ever ship fighters. I hope they never, ever, 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 ever ship fighters. Because I think the fighters that are currently in Federation Commander are for the Hydrans. Yes, they need them. Because, as I said, it's part of their whole fleet design. Versus Feds, which they have all these fighters, and then they have all these drones, and just it's then what do you do in Federation Commander? Well, you don't have wild weasels, you don't have T-bombs to destroy all these drones that are coming your way, you know. So,
Federation, I think Federation Commander is kind of flawed when it comes to representing the Starfleet universe from the Starfleet battles perspective. And the whole general war perspective. So, a nice idea, but not necessarily a great execution in some respects.
What way?
There was a reason I never picked it up. And that that's probably the main part of it. It's kind of like SFB, very light, but not SFB. It's very different.
Right. Oh, yes. I agree that it's definitely very different, especially given...
But the problem is they want to shoehorn the SFB universe into that.
No, I don't feel like they were doing that. I feel like they were, when it comes to Federation Command versus SFB, the whole idea was to take SFB, get rid of all of the rules, make it so that it's more Baron Pretzels, in that it doesn't have nearly as many rules. And obviously, there are certain things that, to simplify things, do not translate.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it not SFB. It makes it a whole different game.
It's a whole different animal.
Right. It's like playing Starmada versus SFB. It might have the background material. Most part, it tries to emulate SFB to a certain degree, but it's not. You know, it's not.
So you wanted to talk about your upcoming game on Saturday?
Yes, yes.
I do have some good news, if I can like throw it in real quick before we get into that.
Shoot.
I had a random email yesterday. Mm-hmm. I didn't get it until today. But apparently we're going to be able to do the venue in 2026 for the winter convention at least. So I have the contract printed out, and I just have to like review it, sign it, and get it over to them.
Awesome.
But he's already got us reserved for the, and I told him, yeah, I'll just get the contract back to them then after I make sure the dates are and everything are good. And it's looking pretty good there. So yeah, we have Labor Day weekend and President's Day weekend. MLK was not available. So there's that. I just wanted to throw that out there randomly because
that was gonna be a tough one.
An email I got this morning.
That's gonna be a tough one because I looked that up for next year, and Valentine's Day lands right on the Saturday. So.
Yeah, well, you know, what can I say? Perhaps with some planning, people can come out for Saturday and Sunday that are not slaves to an artificial holiday.
Agreed. Agreed. And hopefully also, I feel like one of the things that also brought down attendance this past year when it comes to winters was weather. That did not help at all. So
no, the weather hurt. The weather hurt big time, I think. But then again, we've also had it in worse weather in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a combination of things. Yes. I think there's a lot of people that just didn't come out because they weren't just going to come out. I know there were a few people that weren't feeling well that weekend,
mm-hmm.
and just wrote the whole weekend off. So we'll see. I've got some. I have plans. We need to do a little stealth campaign of mentioning this and pushing it out to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reminds me, I need to get a copy of the.
I would like to get it back up to breaking even again, mm-hmm. at least.
Right. Oh, we need to do that.
Although doing better than break even is, in my opinion, a good thing too.
Agreed. I totally agree there. Okay. So we're gonna move on to discussion of battle. Obviously, for those of you who've been here before, have been on the podcast for at least the past couple months, you know about my fleet. And just a review real quick about it. Put it on video so you can see it, which is, let's make it a little bigger. You got the Saltorian heavy cruiser. I got two heavy cruisers, which have the four particle cannons. We've got the two web breakers on each of them. We've got the eight phaser ones and the four phaser threes. This is obviously anyone who's played in the tournament, you know, the regular, you know, tournament where you duel out, you know, that this looks, should look very, very familiar, because that's what it's based off of, which is this heavy cruiser. They of course tweaked it for the tournament, i.e. the battery has five. This one, the normal one, has only four. And I got two of these heavy cruisers, and I have two of these destroyers. The destroyers have only two particle cannons, one by breaker, only have four phaser ones and four phaser threes. It has a movement cost of 1/2. So just because, given that, that's not bad, because it's got 16 warp, so it can go, you know, it can go pretty good speed. 16 warp, four APRs and two impulse. So that gives a total of 22 points of power when it comes to each turn. It's got a turn mode of C, and the CA has a turn mode of D. So to say the very least, these ships are not very maneuverable. And that's perfectly fine. Obviously, the minor issue here is that my breakdowns are 4 through 6. Now, that, as I said, when it comes to the previous battle with the five destroyers, my dear sweet opponent, did not realize that his destroyers would have even worse breakdown rating. He had a breakdown rating of 3 to 6. And to my shock and dismay, when he headed five of them, only one broke down. So, c'est la vie. So, what am I up against? We've got the Federation Scout Frigate. Now, it's got the plush refit. And the way 175 refit, what that means is that the APR an APR was added, so it has one more point of power, and also a drone rack was added for it. It has no photons, it's got three phaser ones and two phaser threes, and it has a total of 16 power, because it's got 12 warp, 3 impulse, and 1 APR.
Kill it.
Yep. Now, if you notice, Okay, hold on.
With no mercy, just everything into that on the first opportunity. Make it go boom.
Oh, agreed there. The great thing about the low power situation is, of course, as I mentioned before, special sensors, they have two of them. Problem, he doesn't have much energy to actually power them. Now, it's got a 1/3 movement cost ship. So, in theory, he can actually use one of the special sensors for EW that he can land. But that's going to be about it if he wants to keep up any kind of speed whatsoever. Moving onward. Yes.
The big problem for you with it, in my opinion, is that it could be the thing that tips it one way or the other at the right spot.
Right.
Which is why it must die.
Oh, agreed. Next ship in his lineup is a Federation Destroyer Leader, and he definitely has the plush refit, which has six phaser ones, two phaser threes, two photons. So this destroyer has only two photons and two plasma Fs, which makes things quite interesting. Fortunately, the plasma F's only last till range 15, but of course, that means anytime we approach that, he can launch those things and force me to limit the range that I come in at, or otherwise run right into the plasma. Because unlike
they also get he also gets a pair of bakes too with those, I believe.
A pair of what?
Pseudos.
Right, of course. Yeah. And
don't forget, he could also
could
just
also
bolt
to incarnate them as well.
Right. But that the re-up one. I've never used a carronade. And I know what it allows them to fire every two turns. That I remember.
So. Actually, for carronades, fire every turn.
What's that?
You dropped.
Carronades fire every turn.
Every turn. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You said it too fast for me to understand. That was the problem. So, yeah.
Sorry.
That's fine. But yeah, fortunately, we only have one of these destroyer leaders. Notice no drones. Has no drones, but definitely has four AWR converted for the lab into four AWR, and has four impulse and didn't mean to do that. And 15 warp. It's just like the original destroyer. Movement cost of 1/2, and it's like the destroyer pluses that has obviously the additional AWR converted before allowed the four AWR as I mentioned. So he's got a total of 23 power. The destroyer leader should be able to handle reloading those photons a heck of a lot better than the destroyers that I faced previously. So they can the whole fleet can move at a faster speed. Next one. The Federation new light cruiser. 2/3 movement. It's got, of course, the plus refit, and the AWR refit. So he's got 4 photons for this guy. It's 2/3 movement. It's got 24 warp, 4 impulse, and 4 AWR. So that means, okay, we got 24 and 4 is 28, 32 total power. So it can keep up a decent amount and still fire those photons. So currently we have, between the DDL and the NCL, we've got a total of 6 photons at the moment. So not a heck of a lot. And it has 1 drone rack. So far, of all of the ships, we've got a total of 2 drone racks so far. Last and certainly not least, the Federation Bismarck class battle cruiser, the BCF. Movement cost of 1. It's got all these beautiful phaser ones. It's got a total of 10 phaser ones. It's got 2 phaser threes. It's got 2 drone racks. It's got 2 plasma Fs. And it's 4 photons. So that's pretty good. It's actually got 7 batteries. So yeah. So we got 30.
Now, is that a ship that's subject to shock?
No.
Or no.
I got double checked. I'm pretty sure it is not. And the reason why it's not subject to shock, because this is not the New Jersey. The New Jersey had the 6 photons.
Right.
And that's the one that definitely could lead to shock. And there's one other battle cruiser which, instead of having plasma Fs, has drone racks. So it would have 4 drone racks versus only 2 drone racks. Now, the amount of power this sucker has, we got...
There's actually two more variants than that as well. There's one that has phaser ones in the gunhouse, and there's one that has special sensors in the gunhouse.
Huh. Did not know that one.
The sensor one was meant to be in case it was used to hunt down Andromeda satellite bases.
A BCS. Yeah. Mm. I know that one from Starfleet Warlord. But okay, we have 32 points of regular warp power. We've got that makes 32. We've got five AWR. That makes it 37. And four more impulse for a total of 41 points of power. So obviously it can easily fire its photon torpedoes, which now gives us a total of 10 photon torpedoes. We've got a total of four drone racks and four plasma Fs. So to say at the very least, we don't have to worry about a lot of drones, but of course, given things as they are, that means most probably we'll be having to deal with a lot of fast drones. Because I'm willing to bet they might launch the fast drones along with the plasma apps.
Don't forget, he might double up the danger capacity there, the damage. And trade them in for fours.
Right. When it comes to the type 1s versus type 4s, yes. That is very true. Obviously, the question is, how will he want to use his drones versus plasmas? Because the plasmas, obviously, he's going to want to use his plasmas as definitely a deterrent for coming in, for me coming in. Because he can do a lot more damage at a longer range than I can. But the question, I don't think this is going to be the case for him. It might do it in initial battle pass, but it might not do it after that. Which is the question is, will he be using the prox photons? I can see that on the initial closing, but after that, he's going to recharge it to being standard torpedoes at that point. But I don't see him going through the whole game firing prox photons.
Well, bear in mind, Paul, that he's got a lot more close-range firepower than you as well, because he could decide to overload the photons and carronade the plasmas and then just rush you, because your particle cannons, even if you overload them, you don't have the same single impulse crunch power that he has. So
he could
basically, and also because like, if at the start of the battle his shields are going to be the strongest, so he might decide to just wade in, you know, punch the lights out of one of your cruisers or something at the start of the game, and then, you know, whittle away at the rest going forward. So that might be something to bear in mind as well.
True, very true. Because the big issue, obviously, for those of you who've ever flown the Deltorians, I'm not sure how many of you out there have actually done that. I've flown it quite a few times, as I've always mentioned, about the particle cannons. I love the particle cannons in that it allows you to choose what you're going to do at the point of firing. So that's the great thing about having a capacitor. Problem? It's got the damage of a disruptor with the hit of a photon. So, say really, that really bit me multiple times in my last game because of the particle cannons just kept on missing. Now, was it outside the actual distribution of randomness? No, not really. But I wanted to be better than that number. Yeah, that'd be nice. Because I was always firing at the longer range. The longer range only had a 50% chance of actually hitting with the particle cannons. And there were sometimes actually I'd miss with like more than half my particle cannons, which was annoying, to say the very least. But when it's like, you know, this was my opportunity and I missed. So.
Well, by the way, Paul, so when we were talking earlier about the idea of like potentially, like say, limiting each squadron to one move cost one ship for the flagship. So what would you have taken instead of a second heavy cruiser?
Whoa. If I would be forced to fire, to use some, only if you only can get one size class, well, one movement class, one ship. Jeez.
Survey cruiser?
They don't have a survey cruiser.
Oh, man. What about a carrier?
Maybe it's a conjectural one, but it's also a movement class one.
Yeah, the big issue for it, for South Korea overall, it's just that they didn't have that many ships earlier on. And I even had to get an exception to actually be able to play the Saltorians in this tournament because of they didn't arrive until like what was it, was 182, I think it was?
Yeah, it was a time frame issue.
Right.
Historical thing.
So man.
Plus you're kind of shoehorning them in the way it is, so there it is.
Okay, so the check the cost of the
heavy. Maybe a light cruiser and then swap one of the destroyers for a scout.
Yeah, well, that's the big question, is it not? Do we have it here? Well, how do I have it open?
Oh, commando cruiser. Try to get those boarding raids in.
I don't have it open at the moment. Okay. But I thought I did, but I didn't. I was looking for a module E3. Because to tell me what comes to the year that they were introduced. Because, yeah. And also give me the numbers on cost. Because I'm pretty sure this guy, this heavy cruiser, was costing around 125, 130 per. I think that's right. So, what I might have done is, you're probably right. If it was available, a light cruiser, and possibly a frigate. I'm not sure about that because use a light cruiser, that means it probably is, you know, saving me, what, maybe 20 points? So, I might be able to pick up a frigate also.
Yeah, the heavy cruiser is a BPV of 142, and then the light cruiser is 127. So it's actually quite big for a light cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saving 15 points. And you could exchange that. Yeah, that's right. The frigate is 73 points, and the DD is 96. So that would have been 13 points. So it's almost the price difference there. And the scout is 100/65, but it is available in year 182. Because historically, they developed the scout to help search for Tholians before they arrived in the galaxies, in the Milky Way galaxy. So they did have the scout. They just weren't used to the idea of using it as a battle scout until the Klingons advised them that you could do that.
Right.
But
the
frigates, a destroyer, a CL, and a CA, that's still a reasonably flexible force.
Yeah, if the...
Oh, no, sorry, I'm thinking of the other way around. You wouldn't need a frigate. You could actually pay more if replacing the destroyer. So you could actually... because if you got the frigate instead of the destroyer, you'd actually be retracting even more money away. Or EPPV away, I should say. So, but they do have a couple of... You can, instead of a light cruiser, you could ask them if you could take the Saltorian heavy war destroyer, because they seem to be, the tournament, the current rules seem to be allowing if they with one ship, like
yep.
if it's a heavy war destroyer, even if it's got a year of service date after a while, maybe you can still take it. So if it counted as your second size class 3 ship, then you can configure it in a certain way and see how you end up with it there.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be quite as sturdy as the light freezer though.
Yeah, that's one of the things that as I discussed here previously, is that I would have loved, and I do mean this with all sincerity, to have switched out one of my heavy cruisers for actually a survey cruiser, which was, but then I heard that I found out that it was completely conjectural, in which case it was unallowed in the tournament. Because of I still feel that, you know, to this day, that when it comes to scouts, you truly need to have an effective scout. You need one that's based off of a heavy cruiser hull. Because not because of it needs the internals, but it needs the power that, you know, that a heavy cruiser hull gives it. You know, that's why I think the D6D is so effective. It's because it's got all that power. And for the most part, it doesn't need it. It needs it for movement, and that's it. Doesn't need it for power, for weapons that much. Yes, it has some phasers that it can use to fire, but it's not going to, especially with, if you're going to use it as a scout, you're not going to fire the phaser ones that much, because if I recall correctly, a phaser one will blind one phaser one will blind one special sensor.
Yeah, phaser one will do it, and so will any heavy weapon. Yeah.
So, you know, if they're going to use them,
so will a gas.
You're not going to fire. What about light cruisers?
What about a scout light cruiser then? Because it's not quite as big as a heavy cruiser, but it's still effective, and I'm pretty sure that they have them historically.
Yeah.
At any rate, about Saturday, what are you thinking?
When it comes to tactics?
Yeah. Just kind of try and pick off one at a time. Get rid of a scout and play a sniper game with him.
Yeah. The key thing here, in this, let's look at the ships again. Okay. Well, obviously the first turn we're just going to be closing, but I think that this game is going to be a little different from the Destroyer game in that I feel like Justin is going to go faster than the Destroyers, because he's got the power to actually move. Now, my tactics, this guy is going to be a tough thing to kill. And that's the question. Do I focus on the scout? Because also remember that if he's actually using the scout for EW work, as a scout, you know, scout and doing things like that, that scout's going to be near the end, it's going to be near the back of his fleet. So, at least on the approaching fleet, he can have it in the back, but sooner or later, he's got to turn it. And the question is, will he try to keep it as far away from me as possible, i.e. the scout will be the first thing to turn. And then they'll turn a little bit later just to give the scout a chance to stay behind a kind of a screen of the other ships. And if that's the case, it makes it really hard to get to the scout. So it most probably is going to keep either the NCO, because this the question is, yeah, I know that the scout will not be in, if he plays a super stack, the scout will not be in that super stack. The way I figured it, because he's going to want to keep that at a little further distance, because the frigate scout is not going to be doing any offensive attacking for the most part. It might add its drone to it, especially given that he's facing an opponent which has no seeking weapons. Because if I had seeking weapons, then there's possibility he might hold back on launching the drones, a drone. Especially if it was a drone. That in fact, if I was a drone race, most probably that G rack, because I'm pretty sure that's a G rack, would be filled with anti-drone drones at that point. So, depending upon how he's got his other ships set up, if his other ships are a super stack, then obviously I can either try to get to the scout, which means I have to. Well, the problem is, on initial battle pass, the big issue is going to be that if we start getting close, you know,
Well, look at it from his dilemma. What's he got to do to pick your fleet apart?
Well,
and what failed on the last one that fought against you? I mean, the other guy tried proxies and that kind of failed.
Right, so he's going to want to come in close and fire overloads up my units, especially because I have no scout. But, you know, when it comes to defense, obviously I do have a decent amount of defense when it comes to ECM. And, of course, the destroyers, given that they're half cost, you know, the rack maneuvering is only 3 points of power. And that will get you 4 points of ECM.
Well, he might also come in with standards too. And just clip that range or hit you with partial overloads. Although if it's weapon status 3, he'll probably have full overloads. If he wants to go that route.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. My guess is he's going to want getting close. Now, obviously, if I get in close. Yes, Gary.
Did you get a chance to use your transporters last game?
No.
Do you think it might be something you could use this time? Because you could try to board the scout. Like, if you're going to be getting that close, then he's probably going to drop a shield on you anyway, but. Do you have the, you have to be very lucky to take out all of your transporter pads at once. And,
right.
You know, you could basically still try to leverage them in that close range, because you should still have, as long as you can hit with the shield crackers, then you can make it more difficult for him to reinforce in that same impulse. So you'd be able to board or hit and run something. So I guess the question is, like, would you sooner try to board the scouts, or kind of like, double sure that it's out of commission, or maybe pick something bigger, like one of the photons or plasma Fs on the bigger ships.
I think a big problem for him on that is that if he gets in that situation, it's going to be dependent on that scout being close enough.
Yeah.
It's if he doesn't super stack it and he has that scout, way behind and holding off at a far distance, he's not going to be able to get use transporters on them at all.
Yep.
So he might be able to focus fire on it at long range and cripple it or take it out. Or he might ignore it and focus fire on, like, the NCL, because that's probably his weak point. It's not as beefy as the CA, or the CC, I should say.
BCF.
BCF. Yeah, I'm sorry.
The battle cruiser.
But yeah. Yeah, the battle cruiser. But if you want to take something out with the, with his transporters, yeah, that's probably going to be more of an opportunity thing.
Yeah, always the toughest. Okay,
straight
the,
up opportunity.
One thing. Of the toughest problems I had with transporters was opportunity / batteries available. Mm-hmm. Because invariably, when it comes to the batteries, is that I was using the batteries to actually reinforce my ship or possibly to fire that extra phaser one so that I could, you know, obviously do some damage to my ship or make sure I didn't have as much damage, you know. So that was the issue I ran into, which is why actually one thing that happened is that he tracked my ship. Because why? I used all my batteries to protect the destroyer because it was getting internals and I wanted to limit the amount of internals that I actually got. And to do that, I had to use up all the batteries, in which case he was able easily to tractor that destroyer. So it was probably, you know, when it comes to his tactics, one thing he's going to probably be doing is focusing on the destroyers because they're smaller ships, are easier to kill. So, and I'm still debating on, you know, this last time I didn't do a super stack. Kind of debating on whether.
Good idea.
What's that?
It might be a good idea to do a super stack and snipe him.
Just yeah.
Stay out at long range and just whittle him down.
That's yeah, true.
Get a shield down and just start trying to Amitsia the guy.
True. Because especially given that most probably he won't use prox photons. Because if he does, that obviously he does use prox photons, then staying at the range that I need to be, which is within range 15. That's not good. That gets into his sweet range, his sweet zone, where prox photons can hit quite nicely.
Yeah, but that's the trade-off. I mean, you still get a second shot, though.
Yep.
And if you're hitting him at that range, and turning away and turning back, you get two shots in on him. I mean, there's that possibility for it.
Yep.
You don't have to overload to do it. So, yep. You just got to remember to focus fire when you do it. And pick on that same shield repeatedly.
Yeah, but there's always the more difficult issue about that, which is keep on hitting the same shield.
Yeah. And then, you know, the other thing is if you manage to get a few internals, he's probably going to protect that ship the next turn. So then you need to pick another target.
Right.
Exactly. Rinse and repeat. So.
Exactly.
I don't know. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's my tackle advice. Get really lucky with your dice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm hoping I'll do well with my dice. Well, with that, we need to wrap up the evening because it is definitely getting late. So, Gary. Oops. is gone. Bye, Gary. Doug, you're still here, right? He's here. It was great having you on. Have a good night. Okay. That's weird. Kind of disappeared. Kind of. He's still there. I checked. He's online. He's still online. Anyway, had a nice little discussion about the 500 BPP tournament again. I know, guys. And it's been the same. That topic has been, we've been hitting it for almost over the past straight month, whether it is my game or it is actually the tournament itself and discussing the rules and things like that. And today you actually got the little preview of the ships that we're flying. I'm flying against. Obviously, those who listened before already know that what my fleet composition was. Hopefully, I will do good this time. Obviously, the biggest issue here is going to be just he's actually got a scout who can use EW a heck of a lot more effective than I can. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.